hello, fellow baseball and fantasy baseball nuts, and a big warm welcome to the best seat in the house that is behind home plate. My name's Johnny Gill, former presenter of Channel 5 Baseball, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome my good friend and fantasy legend, Mr. James Holden. Jimbo, you well?
JG, yeah, I'm all good. I am all good, but no all-star break for you and I then this week.
No, we have listeners out there, Jimbo, as you know. They have needs. I have needs. We all have fantasy needs. They all come first, regardless of what's happening elsewhere.
Fair enough. Understandable. And so much has happened in the world of sports since we last spoke, Jonathan.
Indeed, my friend. I don't know if you've recovered from the despair of Sunday night. I mean, it is the hope that kills us. And I have such mixed emotions. I was so proud of this English team. And despite the extreme emotional low that we all went through with defeat at that yet another disastrous penalty shootout, I had nothing but love and pride for this team. And then I wake up the next morning to this nonsense, this depressing, disgraceful nonsense that these players have endured, all because they missed a couple of penalties. And I tell you, buddy, it just upset me greatly. And it distresses me. It's not what sport is about. It's not what I understand sport to be. And as you know, I've been pretty critical of football down the years, and I think with good reason. But this team is the exception. This team has made me proud to be.
I should say we are referring, of course, to England's defeat in the European Football Championships to Italy on Sunday night. For those not in Europe, this was a massive, massive deal in these.
They didn't need to be in Europe. It's a world story. I was watching Pardon the Interruption on the TV the other night, the great US sports show, and they were discussing it at great length. Everybody knows it's a top of the table story. And I want to just quote you a couple of things that I've picked out, Jimbo. And this is to those idiots out there that tried to ruin that night and the nonsense, the racist nonsense that came on afterwards. And I want to tell you this. I think it was Michael Jordan said, "Don't be afraid to fail. Be afraid not to try." Love that. Babe Ruth said, "It's hard to beat a person who never gives up. The people who say you can't and you won't are properly scared that you will." And this is my favorite. Hank Aaron, who of course was honored in the All-Star game last night, "My motto was always to keep swinging. Whether I was in a slump or feeling badly or having trouble off the field, the only thing to do was keep swinging." And I do hope the English footballers keep swinging all the way to a World Cup win and put these idiots in their place. Enough of that. It's all negative. I want to get away from the negativity, Jimbo. I want to focus on the positive. Mind you, it's not that positive. Lions rugby, tour to South Africa. We've just had our first loss of the tour against a very strong South African A team, super A star team is how I would describe them. And that happened tonight because, of course, we're recording on Wednesday night, the 14th of July.
It did. It did. And I think the big... I know you're massively passionate about your rugby, but for me, the real sad news of the week was, of course, the injury to Ronald Acuna. And as Braves fans, I feel that kind of puts the nail in the coffin for the Braves season this year. Mike Soroka out, Ronnie Acuna out, Ian Anderson maybe having an injury, Marcel Ozuna having very significant charges against him. I think it's really difficult to see where we go from here.
Well, I'm funny. You don't even mention Max Fried, question mark about his shoulder. Anderson is being looked at after his last outing. You know, so our starting rotation is absolutely traumatized. Buddy, I'm not in disagreement with you that I cannot see us winning the division. What I'm in disagreement with you is you think we're going to become sellers at the trade deadline. I don't believe that. I don't think that with only a four and a half games back of the Mets, that they're going to give up on the season. I don't think they have enough firepower to be able to overcome, but I don't think they're going to give up. I think they're going to keep going to the end. And you never know. With Freddie still there, with Ozzy Albies, who of course was an all-star, you never know, buddy. For us Braves fans, there is still hope. We need some kids to step up, buddy. We need some kids to step up.
Right, go on. You be Mr. Positive. Right, where are we going today?
Well, I'm going to be Mr. Positive by telling all our listeners here on Behind Home Plate that Wayne Gretzky, the greatest ice hockey player ever to play the game, said, "You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Take that out into your life. Take a shot, whether you miss or not. Be that guy, be that woman that takes a shot." We'd love to hear from you. If you think I'm talking nonsense, email us on behindhomeplatepod@gmail.com, or you can contact us on Twitter. Now, this is very exciting. We have our own Twitter handle for the show. That is at BHPPod, Behind Home Plate Pod. Or you can contact us directly. My Twitter handle is at Johnny M. Gould, Jimbo at Jam99, because he's trying to be young and sexy and basically going through a midlife crisis. But that's another story. Lots of you can... I just kept going, buddy. I didn't see that. I just didn't want to...
That's a whole separate podcast of its own, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. It is.
Jimbo's midlife crisis.
Absolutely. And you did notice I didn't give you any chance there to react. So I moved on swiftly. So look, just a quick lineup of what we've got to look forward to on today's show, Jimbo. First batter, I want to talk about this week's action at Coors Field. I assume you saw the home run derby. I hope everybody did. It was fantastic. And then, of course, last night, the All-Star game, all about one man, the MVP, the legend that is Vlad Guerrero Jr., who, of course, hit a home run during the game. I think he drove in a couple of runs as well. His dad hit a home run in an All-Star game not that long ago either. Could he be the 2021 MVP, not just the All-Star MVP? That's something for us to discuss. Our second batter up at the plate. I want to look forward to the second half of the season, Jim. I want to get your insight, your knowledge, your expertise, get some insights as to what to expect, what implications that has for all our fantasy teams, particularly whether or not you believe in this curse of the home run derby, and that's it. Pete Alonso stuff for the rest of the season. We want some thoughts on that. And finally, as always, this week's suitcase, some key pickups of the week from Jimbo, and of course, a Hail Mary. All that on today's Behind Home Plate.
Sounds good.
It does. Sounds very exciting. Packed. It's a packed shift, which is why we've got to move it on. So, batter one, home run derby, All-Star game. Now, Jimbo, you know how much I love the All-Star game. Ever since 2006, Channel 5 took the decision to send me and Josh and Eric out to Pittsburgh for the 2006 All-Star game to cover it live in a booth overseeing the pitch. I love PNC Park.
Massive, nice stadium. I was going to say, lovely stadium.
Beautiful stadium. Anybody out there that wants to travel and go to a baseball stadium, yes, the obvious ones, the Fenways, the Wrigley Park, Wrigley Field. But guys, do go to Pittsburgh. It's a glorious stadium and they're lovely people. We also went in 2007 to San Francisco. Again, I absolutely love San Francisco. And 2008, we went to the iconic Yankee Stadium. So glad I ticked that box. But I have to say, wasn't a pleasant experience. Very arrogant, very obnoxious, didn't enjoy it at all. The evil empire living up to their reputation. That's another story. But I'm a big, big fan of the All-Star game and the home run derby. And of course, this year won by Pete Alonso for a second successive year. And the great story for me, perhaps the hidden story, Trey Mancini, who of course has returned as a survivor of cancer, who was a rank outsider going into this competition, made it all the way to the final and pushed Big Pete all the way. Now, I know, Jimbo, you chose Matt Olson. Terrible selection, went out in the first round. I chose Shohei Ohtani, not so terrible, still went out in the first round, but went out in a thriller. It went out in a thriller to Juan Soto. You know, they had to go through like two. Very exciting, very exciting. So does this portend auspicious things, I'm going to ask you, for Pete Alonso in the second half of the season? We've all heard about the home run derby curse.
We've heard. I'm hoping those listeners who listened last week will have heard us talk quite a bit about the curse and how there's an awful lot of statistical evidence, which, as you know, is something I believe in more than just, you know, generic rhetoric and the Johnny Gould school of interesting stories. But so, yeah, I don't think there's a curse. I think potentially, I mean, Pete Alonso, I mean, if you heard some of the things he was saying afterwards, I mean, he was a confident man feeling that, you know, he owned this title now. And you kind of felt he'd be back for three or four more years to kind of try to keep hold of it. If I had Alonso in my fantasy team, I'd be pretty happy with a very confident Pete Alonso clearly hitting the ball well. The Mets are, you know, still looking good. They're above 500, they're top of the National League East. They need Alonso to be a core part of that team for them to win the division. And I think all the elements are there. So, yeah, I think he'll have a strong second half.
Buddy, you won't find me betting against Pete Alonso winning the next two or three home run derbies. He was that good. I mean, he came out and he instantly was in his groove and he was smashing that ball. They weren't just creeping over the fence. They were drilled into the upper echelons of the stand and the crowd loved it. And his confidence was there for everyone to see. Which is all the more reason why I was so impressed with Trey Mancini's efforts, who nobody rated, nobody ranked, nobody thought he had a chance, but he really pushed him hard. It was a great home run derby. Absolutely loved it and reminded me of my all-time favourite, 2008, Josh Hamilton, who I think he hit 28 home runs in the first round, which at the time was a record. Pete Alonso, of course, has now broken that record with last night's performance, 35 home runs in the first round. I mean, that is
phenomenal. I mean, I, as you do, found myself watching the 1999 home run derby the other night, because I have the MLB app on my TV, and it's interesting because that's actually the last year that somebody went back to back, and that was Ken Griffey Jr. And it was interesting. The first round there were like three or four players who got two home runs, and he just, I mean, I don't know. I mean, he's actually, his technique improved so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, half the players got two home runs, and now you know, you're getting
a big part of that, buddy. Was of course we're at Coors Field, the ultimate hitter's bar. You know, all those thousands of feet above sea level, and they did not use the humidor, so everybody was predicting a run fest, which developed in the home run derby, but didn't develop in the All Star game itself. 5-2 final score. That's not exactly excessive, which perhaps says a lot about the quality of the pitching. Did you get a chance to watch the All Star game?
I've seen the highlights. Yeah, I mean, I'm slightly surprised, as you say, the American League winning. I honestly thought on paper that the National League looked stronger. We are fans of the National League. I thought this was, you know, the end of the American League streak. And yeah, I was surprised by the end result.
Well, it's interesting because my overriding impression, having obviously been watching since 1997, is that the AL have dominated. And yet the overall record, they're only just in front. I don't know if you know this. As a result of last night's win, the AL have now won 46 to the 43 wins for the NL with two ties. Now, since 1988, though, the AL has completely and utterly dominated the All-Star game, which is why the impression you and I have is that it's a one-way traffic. And rightly so, because the record is 26-6-1. So 26 wins to 6 losses. And they had a 13-game unbeaten streak. That was a 12-0-1 from 97 to 2009. And as we know, home field was awarded to the winning team in the World Series up until 2017. So thank God that's not happening anymore, because the National League just getting their asses spanked. So I'm at a loss to understand what is happening to the NL. Why can they not produce in the All-Star game? Does it make any sense to me?
No, I agree with that. I mean, it doesn't. And, you know, so the National League, they haven't won since 2012. But actually, I was thinking kind of, is it a weaker league? I don't think so on paper. I don't think the players. And actually, when you look at the World Series winners, although the American League have won the All-Star game for now, what's that, 10 successive years, is it? Actually, the National League have won more World Series in the 11 years since. So I don't think there's anything particularly in it. Maybe the National League save themselves the World Series and don't worry too much about the All-Star game.
Well, focusing on some positives of the National League, Tatis Jr. led off for the National League. First San Diego Padre hitter to start an All-Star game since, would you believe it, 1998, Jimbo.
Yeah, I mean, that I think says so much about how the Padres' fortunes are really changing in recent years. And I think, you know, quite how long that they were in the relative doldrums. So if you are a San Diego Padres fan, I mean, to have waited 23 years to see somebody in your hitters lineup appear in the All-Star game opening lineup is quite something. But really exciting for Padre fans now. And I think there'll be plenty more Padres in the All-Star game in the years to come.
So what about, this is particularly with relevance to people's fantasy baseball teams, anyone impress you above and beyond, you know, the obvious superstars?
Yeah, I mean, if I had to pick two, I mean, obviously it was Vlad's night. He got the MVP. You know, he had a phenomenal evening and was, you know, playing up all night in a good way. It's Cedric Mullins. There was this beautiful quote in the commentaries about Mullins has wheels, and he absolutely did. There's some lovely photos on social media of him with this enormous extended family, just looking so happy to be at the All-Star game.
Yeah.
And then when he played, and he's so fast around the bases. And, you know, we talked, I think he was in one of the first suitcases of the season. I mean, to me, he's a top 50 player this season. And I think he'll stay there. All those steals, good place to hit balls. He really impressed with him. And the other one was Freddy Peralta, who I know you absolutely love. Freddy Peralta, one innings, three batters, three strikeouts. Can't ask for anything more than that.
Buddy, I was watching that inning live. I mean, it was lights out. And I'm sitting there going, I haven't got him in a single fantasy baseball team. Five leagues I'm in, he's not in one. And I'm like, what have I done? What have I done? I mean, he's just class. Absolutely love it. And yet, you've been hinting to me that you anticipate he's going to have shorten sort of, they're going to put a limit on his innings pitched. So there is the danger that, that he's not going to complete until the end of the season. And that's something to look out for if you've got him in your fantasy team.
True. True. We've got some stuff on him in a minute. But yes, I think it's a shame. But you like him. Don't worry. You've got Trevor Rodgers everywhere, Johnny. So you haven't done too badly this
true.
Year. So,
very yeah. true. Yeah, very true. Hey, buddy, just before we move on, I have to say one of my absolute favourite moments was players being mic'd up and chatting as the game was going on, as they were fielding. And I mean, as if Freddie Freeman could not be a bigger hero of mine. Right now, my favourite Brave, and that's extraordinary when you consider the Acuna. I love Acuna to bits. And obviously, Chipper's my all-time favourite. Henry Aaron, my second favourite. Freddie now, comfortably, third all-time favourite Brave. What a funny guy, taking the mick out of Aaron Judge's height and his son. I mean, have you seen the footage on Twitter of him with the family, with his little boy and his lovely wife, Chelsea? I mean, I just love it. He's such a top boy, Freddie.
It is brilliant. And for Freddie Freeman to openly admit that, yeah, his five-year-old son is, you know, his favourite player is Tatis, and that was the whole highlight. And he was sitting there on the pitch, you know, in the game, yeah, I am dad of the year because I got my son to meet meet Fernando Tatis. Your dad's the MVP of the National League.
Yeah, but buddy, did you hear what his son said to him earlier in the season when things weren't going well and there was a question mark about whether he'd be an all-star if he wasn't? If you remember, he wasn't hitting the ball particularly well. And his son rebuked him about, you need to pick up your, you know, pull up your socks and pick up your game, dad. Not because he wanted his dad to be an all-star for the glory of his father, but because that was the only way, if his dad was at the all-star game, he was going to meet his hero, that is Tatis Jr.
Lovely. That is
great.
Brilliant.
Absolutely,
that is brilliant. There were some slightly deeper moments actually, because Freddie did the big, and then Tatis Jr. had the mic on later on, and actually they were asking him how he's, and he talked about, you know, the relationship him and Vlad Jr. and was it competition, and he sort of said no, and he said something I thought was really interesting. He said, "We are living the same life," and I thought that must be so true. You know, these two guys both had dads in baseball. Just the amount of pressure, the amount of stuff, you know, on their shoulders, and you know, sort of debuting as superheroes almost at the same time.
So. And how significant is that? And how ironic and relevant and topical is that when you consider what those young men went through in that penalty shootout in the European Championship final? Because these guys have immense pressure on their shoulders. They are the face. They are expected to produce. And do you know what I love about them? And I think this is something the England players can learn from. All I saw from Tatis and from Vlad Jr. was smiles all night. They were just loving it. They're embracing the life they have and loving every moment of it. And I think that's possibly, I know it sounds a bit simplistic, a great way to release the pressure is just enjoy it. Put a smile on your face, you know, swing from the hips. And maybe that's something we could all learn from. It was great. I absolutely loved it. I've always loved the All-Star game. I know a lot of people think it's complete nonsense, but you know what? When I look at the families, you know, that they turn up en masse, the players that really buy into it, they're the ones to me that are the future of baseball. They're the ones that I want to associate with. And you keep talking to me about how it's important to like your fantasy baseball team. It's important to have players there that don't just produce, players that you really invest in, not just because they play for your team, a Freddie Freeman who plays for my Braves, but to have a player like Tatis, who I just love to watch, that enhances the whole fantasy baseball experience.
True. Very true. Very true.
Super dudes. All right, Jimbo, thank you for that. We will move on to batter number two. Now, to really focus on the fantasy aspect is the second half of the season. So, I mean, we say second half. I know it's the midsummer break, which midsummer classic, they refer to it. It always makes me laugh because it's not midsummer and sometimes it's not a classic. But there you go. That's just another thing. We're actually 3/5 of the way through the season. So is it going to be an exciting second half, Jimbo, or are we on the verge of the dog days of August?
I think it's going to be amazing, actually. I think it's completely unknown. I think, you know, given the incredibly short season we had in 2020, given, I don't know, all these superstars in our midst, given so many things are different, I think the only thing we can predict is it's really hard to, you know, predict what will happen. I think if you want to, the one thing I would say, I think we're going to see some massive, massive hitting performances. I think as the sun is coming out, the ball is going to fly out the stadiums. Hitters, you know, they've had 3.5 months now to get in their groove, to work out what they're doing, you know, after such a truncated season last year. Starting pitchers, as we know, will be pitching less this year. So I think you're going to see some phenomenal hitting. I think for fantasy managers, that's going to make hitting exciting and pitching really frustrating at times.
Okay, well, from a fantasy perspective, if you're right, getting your pitching lineup correct is almost going to be the difference maker in terms of being successful. So this is presumably the real challenge for fantasy managers.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the short season last year, I don't think many starting pitchers are going to get to 200 innings pitched. I think either they'll be shut down early, or if they're on a playoff bound squad, I think you'll see a huge amount of phantom trips to the injured list to manage the workload, or even some people you might find actually put into the bullpen for the second half of August and September and then stretched out again for the playoffs.
So what's the strategy then? Knowing that's a possibility, one, how do you target? And two, how do you react?
So for fantasy, I mean, for me, if I was finding myself in a league when I had the ability to draft again for the second half, or the kind of people I'd be targeting in trades, I would be looking to buy veteran arms. People who've been there, done it before, the people who've got the mileage on those arms, the people with the rubber arms. So if you want some names, Kevin Gausman, I think it's quite easy to convince someone that it's all a mirage, but actually everything under the hood says that Gausman is for real. He's a vet. I think he'll pitch all the way through the season. Aaron Nola, again, you know, he is a veteran pitcher. I think he's been much better than his numbers suggest. I think he'll be strong in the second half. Luis Castillo, he couldn't be any worse than he was in the first half. But again, you know, I think he's got the miles on his arms. And I bet you can still buy low. And potentially even those who might be traded. So something like Max Scherzer, potentially on the move, potentially not now that Washington are doing better. There's no way that Max Scherzer is going to give it up halfway through August because he's feeling a bit sore.
Interesting. Also interesting, you pick out Aaron Nola and Luis Castillo, both of whom I've got in, I think, three of my five teams, and I look at Aaron Nolan's numbers, and it, you know, for a supposed ace, he's 4-point-something ERA, and yet you look at the whip, and it's abundantly clear he's been unlucky, and he's still hit, you know, way above one strikeout per inning. So, yeah, I think he's a potential buy low, because I don't think anybody's going to rate him. And Luis Castillo's had, what is it, 3-4 great outings after a disastrous start. So I'm 100%. I think those are two great names, and of course Kevin Gausman, he's had a phenomenal season as well. So. We've had this discussion before, and I'm now want to put you on the point on the spot with a fantasy aspect. You think our Braves are going to be sellers? So I'm assuming if you're convinced that's the case, then someone like, say, for instance, Charlie Morton could be on the move.
Yeah, I think Charlie Morton would be a very interesting pickup. He's somebody who, I think he's a veteran. I think he'll keep going to the end of the season because what's he got to lose? And I think if actually Atlanta is a fantastic place to hit, as we know, it's not a brilliant place to be a pitcher. There's a very good chance that he gets traded, if he does get traded, to somewhere that's actually a better park to hit in. And now watching get traded to Toronto or something. And it's a terrible thing. But yeah, those would be kind of people, Charlie Morton, Drew Smiley, maybe decent pitchers on veteran pitchers on 1 year or possibly 2 year deals. That's who I'd be looking to pick up.
So on the reverse of the coin, are you therefore also saying that now is a time to sell high on young talent? So young talent that, unlike a veteran arm, probably won't go to 200 innings, maybe limited at 150, 160. The obvious ones you mentioned early doors, Freddy Peralta, Trevor Rogers, my superstar pitcher, who I've got in virtually every league, literally the only decent pitcher I've got. Are these guys, you don't see them going beyond about 150, 160 innings?
No, I don't. But equally, I waver regularly on what to do with them because it's all about, even if you trade them, who are you going to put in their place? And it might well be that actually 160 innings of Trevor Rogers is better than the other 50 innings of some veteran SP5 that you're having to put in their place. So it depends what I can get for them. If I can absolutely get a really hot bat to fill a hole in my lineup, I would sell Freddy Peralta tomorrow. If I can't get proper value, I'd ride him out as long as I can because I kind of think the alternatives, it's going to be a tough summer.
But inevitably, if you do that, you are going to lose innings. You know, you're not going to be near your max innings, which therefore means you're struggling in, say, the K's category. So how do you make up those lost innings?
Yeah, you're completely right, John. And this is, we touched on this for the first time last week. This is the time of the season, if you're running a fantasy team, you need to be adding many middle relievers to your team to absolutely manage. Yeah, middle relievers will save your fantasy season, I promise you. They will help with ERA, they will help with whip, they'll get some wins, and they'll really help with strikeouts per nine. And you need to be padding your thing. Much better to pad it with a couple of top-notch middle relievers than put a dangerous fourth or fifth starting pitcher in who blows up all over the place.
Okay, well, buddy, you and I know there is a million and one middle relievers. What I want to know are the ones that you think people should be focusing on. Give us some names.
Okay, give me some names. Give me some names. Okay, I'll literally Colin McHugh, Tampa Bay, incredible strikeout per nine rate. Jonathan Loaisiga of the Yankees, he's already got 7 wins this season. Superb, phenomenal ratios. I imagine that is far better than most starting pitchers on your or my team. Seth Lugo of the Mets, Scott Barlow of Kansas City, Paul Sewald of Seattle, Andrew Chaffin of Chicago Cubs. If you go to any Cubs social media, on Twitter or Facebook or wherever, you will see the love that the Chicago Cubs have for Andrew Chaffin is incredible. He's a massive cult hero with a superb haircut. I think he may well be a trade target. But phenomenal numbers. He's kept them in a lot of games. Garrett Whitlock of Boston, Brad Boxberger at Milwaukee, Nick Sandlin's a young guy come up at Cleveland. Anthony Bender of Miami has been phenomenal. And he's a great story. Came from the international leagues in the offseason. So, you know, I think that's 10. I could go on for a long time. And there is no way that some of those are not on the wire in whatever league you're playing on, and they will really help improve your ratios.
Okay, well, that's enough about pitching. What about hitting? What are the cardinal rules for who to target for the second half? And if you're wanting to do a trade, who should you be targeting?
I think two cardinal rules, really. Hitting, slightly simpler. I think A, if possible, aim for hitter's park. So, you know, we've talked a lot about Toronto, how phenomenal they've been this season. We've talked about Atlanta and how great that is a place to hit. You want to keep looking for kind of, you know, players in hitter's parks. And secondly, and I think most important in the second half of the season, is teams in the hunt. Because teams in the playoff hunt, trying to get the wild card, trying to secure the division, they're going to be playing their superstars every single day in their desire to inch across the line. Teams that aren't in the hunt, they're going to be resting people more often, you know, save their energy for next season, don't want to pick up an injury, that kind of thing. So I'd be absolutely looking for players in the hunt. There'll be more plate appearances, and because they're on better teams, there'll be more runs and RBIs.
Okay, here's something that I've noticed down the years of playing fantasy baseball. There often seems to be players, and this is particularly true of better players, you know, players with a reputation, who stink the place up in the first half of the season. So everybody goes off them. Nobody wants to touch them. And then they tear it up in the second half. And one that springs to mind straight away, a few years back, Jose Ramirez of the Cleveland Indians. I mean, absolutely awful in the first half. And then was not just the superstar that we know him to be, but the superstar plus in the second half. And almost made up for the first half with that performance. Now, is that something that you feel is almost true of every season? And if so, who are we looking for a tear up in the second half of this season?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because there were guys like Brian Dozier who just was always much stronger in the second half of the season. And pitcher-wise, we talk about Luis Castillo. Looks like he could be one of those players who's much better in the second. There's several. I mean, if you want some absolute names, a couple that come to mind, so George Springer. You know, really good bat, somebody I like and often have in fantasy teams. He's at Toronto. We've talked about what an amazing lineup that is on multiple times. But because he's been injured for so much of the first half of the season, I still think he is going to be valued less than his actual value. But there is potential there for him to be one of the top 20 bats there is in the second half of the season. Then you've got someone like Cody Bellinger, who it just hasn't happened this season. And I don't know. You know, there are several stars. Cody Bellinger, Christian Yelich, and Trevor Story. I mean, the forgotten man that's Trevor Story. I mean, all three of those were top 10 picks just 3 or 4 months ago. And no doubt, one of them will be an absolute bust. One will carry on meandering as they are. And one will deliver a top 10 fantasy season in the second half. I don't really know which, but between Bellinger, Yelich, and Story, there's something really interesting. One of those guys has absolutely got the talent to go off. And the final thing I'd say is look at players who've been injured. We talked about Springer, but he's back. And the other one I think is quite interesting is Eloy Jimenez. So Eloy Jimenez, you're a member of the White Sox, got injured right at the beginning of the season, might have even been in preseason, thought potentially out for the whole year. It looks like he might be back in only 2 or 3 weeks. So that might give you a real boost for the last 6 weeks, because I think the White Sox we'll get to the postseason, they will be trying to get him fit, up to speed, and really get him as much game action as they possibly can.
Okay, brilliant, mate. Fantastic stuff. Right, we'll move on. Batter number three. The traditional suitcase. Quick reminder for our listeners, the suitcase is where I ask James to come up with players that are rostered in less than 20% on average in ESPN leagues. So the big question, as always, Jim, who are you packing this week in the suitcase?
It's not a slim line, but not a massive suitcase this week. So a couple of infielders, a couple of outfielders, hitters. Infielders, Bobby Bradley, first base of Cleveland. He's been in here before. He got another two home runs last week. If you need power, he's hitting home runs, getting RBIs. The other infielder on the other side, if you need speed, Vidal Brujan, second base of Tampa Bay. I mean, the jury's absolutely out on him. Will he transform your season or will he be back in the minors in a week? But in terms of his ability to change the game with speed, he really could be a difference maker. Potentially, as I say, or he could be back in the minors. Outfielders, two more, not necessarily veterans, but sort of not in no way rookies. Harrison Bader of St. Louis, again, if he wants steals. He's back from injury. He's playing every day for St. Louis. They need his defense out there. And he's got a reasonably warm bat at the moment. And the other one is Brian Goodwin of the Chicago White Sox.
Well, hang on. Brian Goodwin, you had him as your Hail Mary. It was only last week.
Indeed.
Right. I'm just looking at his stats. Okay, now I see. Right. So in the three games since then, since you labelled him a Hail Mary, he's had a home run and five RBIs. Okay, right. And he's now rostered in 5% of the league. So clearly the listeners have done exactly what I did, buddy. I went out and picked up Brian Goodwin in the only league where he was available, despite the fact that he was supposedly available in all leagues. So clearly I play in better leagues than average because most of them he'd gone. But I've got him. And he has been great. So you're now moving him up from the Hail Mary.
He's made it into the suitcase. We shall see. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be a league winner, but you could do worse in the near term, I would say.
Okay. Right, buddy. What about some pitchers in the suitcase?
Well, again, he refuses to get out the suitcase. I think it's his third week there. So if you need a streamer for this week, Kwang Hyung Kim of St. Louis.
Love Kimmy. I picked him up. Fantastic. Awesome.
I know. I was very disappointed to see that.
I don't quite understand you. You come up with these great tips and you don't go and get them yourself. You sort of, and then you give me a hard time when you realise I've gone and got them.
Very true. I do pick some of them up. There's just not space for everybody. But yeah, I do. I've only got him in one league. And as I said, he's been phenomenal for the last four starts. And I've actually benched him, I think, for three of them because I wasn't quite sure how he was going to do. I will be playing him this week. So no doubt he'll blow up. But yeah, to me, he's got another very winnable matchup this week. So I'll be looking at him. And then closers, there's always, closers on the wire every week. Last week, we mentioned Heath Hembree of Cincinnati and Joaquin Soria of Arizona. Both those guys are still less than 20% rostered. They've both got steals in the light since, four
steals,
days.
Saves.
Saves. Oh, saves. Gosh, yeah. They've done well if they managed to get a steal, haven't they? And I'll give you one more of the Phillies. Ranger Suarez of the Phillies seems to be getting saves there.
Right. Not the official closer, but definitely picking up safe.
Yeah, I think he will become the official closer because he's certainly his ratio is so much better than anybody else's.
Mudge, it's precarious being any kind of relief pitcher in Philadelphia. I mean, their bullpen seems to have been a revolving door all season.
Yeah, it's been a nightmare. I mean, if you're a Phillies fan, the amount of frustrations they must have if you're Zach Wheeler or Nola even, and seeing sort of, first of all, Hector Neris and more recently Jose Alvarado coming in to blow save after save. It's must be incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, I'm not sure Aaron Nola can blame the bullpen, but there you go. Right, Hail Mary. This is players a little bit tougher, rostered in less than 1% of ESPN leagues on average. So, who have you discovered as a potential Hail Mary this week?
Well, I've gone a different direction. After getting excited and giving you two last week, I really struggled this week. So I'm going for kind of a positive story rather than a league winner. So I'm going to give you John Nogowski, the first base of Pittsburgh. He's a 28-year-old rookie, and he happens to have been quite hot for the last week. And Pittsburgh have lots of injuries. So I think for a bit, until they start getting people back, John Nogowski will continue to get at-bats.
Okay. Well, I'm all for it. We should all be pulling for a 28-year-old rookie to succeed. So go, Johnny boy. Fingers crossed for you, sir. I, of course, started my TV career at the age of 33, Jim. So I was an aging rookie.
There is hope.
There's hope
for everybody,
yes.
Isn't it? Yeah, I think if everybody in the minor leagues could get to, you know, maybe listen a bit in on your life story, that might kind of act as inspiration to keep on plugging away.
Do you know what they used to call me, Jim? Do you know what they called me when I got to the office of Croydon Cable?
I think I can come up with an awful lot of things they might have called you, John.
Well, I've got to put you out of your business before you come up with something dodgy. They called me Granddad, mate. 33 years old, I was called Granddad because they were all so young. So, old well before my time, buddy. And that was a long, long time ago. And my first show wasn't even a sports show. I used to do the Saturday Entertainment Show. Guess how much I got paid to present Croydon Cable's Saturday Entertainment Show?
4 shillings and 6 pence.
It was actually in pounds, in sterling. £35, mate. I phoned up the Inland Revenue because at the time I was signing on, the only year of my life when I signed on, I was on income support. And I said, look, I need to make sure that this is okay. And, you know, will you need to take a bit off my income support? And I phoned the office up to inform them I was earning this £35. But do you know what the bloke said? He said, Mr. Gould, don't worry about it. That's how little I was earning. Those were the inauspicious start.
Oh, it's amazing. Oh.
Yeah.
And, anyway. and just look at the, you know, from such small acorns, you know, such broadcasting oak trees are born.
Yeah, I think a weedy sap might be a better description. Well, sadly, Jimbo, that's all we've had time for, and I've absolutely loved it. It's been fantastic. And I do hope you've enjoyed it. We love hearing from you. If you have questions, Jim is absolutely brilliant at coming back to all our listeners. So do email him or me on behindahomeplatepod@gmail.com, particularly if you just want some advice about what to do with your team. You can also contact us on Twitter if you've got a question for the show. We should be more than happy to get on. And that's at BHP Pod. And as ever, you can contact us directly. My Twitter handle at Johnny M. Gould, Jimbo at Jam99. Thanks as always, Jim. I know you've yet again taken time out for your very busy schedule. Do keep the questions coming. I'll obviously be back on the Johnny and Josh show at the weekend. Hope you'll all be listening to that too. And then Jim and I will be rejoining next week for the first week of the second half. Fantasy baseball season that is Major League Baseball, all its implications and advice from the legends. Jim, I want to leave you with one quote, if that's all right.
This again is
tipping my hat to those young Lions. And this is a quote I love. Only he, she, who can see the invisible, can do the impossible. They're the legends. They're the all-stars. Our thanks to them. My thanks to you. Jimbo, you're a legend.
Pleasure. Thanks, Charles. You've left me inspired for the week ahead.
Fantastic. My pleasure, buddy. That's it from us. Thank you for listening. You've had the best seats in the house behind home plate.